Corey and I are so excited to have been invited to this Untangling Our Roots, which is from two organizations that we hold dear to our hearts. It's being hosted by not only Right to Know, which we've had guests on this podcast, and then it's also being hosted by the National Association of Adoptees and Parents. So great organizations. If you're not familiar with them, check out our show notes. We have links to both organizations and to the Untangling Our Roots conference. Corey Lee this week to go to the conference, and of course is excited because he's going to get to physically meet many of the guests that we've had on our podcast. Some of them are presenters and speakers. Corey will also be a presenter and a speaker as part of a podcast focused panel. So he'll do great. I'm really looking forward to see how that turns out. Have you ever imagined discovering a completely different truth about your past as an adult? We are revisiting an extraordinary moment from our guest, Brad Ewell, whose life took an unexpected turn after a DNA test. Brad's journey into the depths of his family history isn't just a tale of discovery, but also a profound exploration of identity, reconciliation, and the complexities of familial bonds. In this clip, you'll hear how Brad confronted the shocking revelation of his adoption at the age of 48, navigated the emotional challenges of connecting with a biological father in prison, and ultimately redefined what family means to him.
I'm not trying to be a pain in the ass, and this is awful. I already know the answer by the way you reacted, and you're going to have to tell me just so it's real. And he said, well, Bradley, you're adopted, and we've been trying to figure out a way to tell you. I was 48 at this point, so I mean, they'd been trying to figure it out for a long time. And that led me into finding out that my biological mother had died 19 years before I found out. Mm. My biological father was alive and was also the ex-husband of the aunt that contacted me on Ancestry. Mm-hmm. She knew my biological father very well, and he had been in Angola State Penitentiary in Louisiana since 1972 and was still there. I'm a police officer.
Okay.
So I immediately inherited a prisoner at my biological father.
Father. As a police officer, you probably know how to reach out to contact someone in prison. Have you gone that route?
We have. Reaching out to somebody in Texas as a cop, not that hard. Reaching out to somebody in Louisiana that's in prison that I have no proof of how I know him, I didn't have a clue how to do that. Mm. You know, if I had to talk to somebody in prison, I call the prison. I'm like, hey, I need to talk to this guy. And they set that up. What I learned quickly is that you have email in prison now. So I could email him and talk to him that way. And that's how things started. I emailed him and he wasn't standoffish, but he wasn't ready to commit to, oh, yeah, you're my son. He goes, oh, yeah, I knew your mom. I was with your mom. I have no idea if I'm your father. I don't think I was the only person she was with. And he kind of left it at that.
Brad's full story promises to move, challenge, and inspire anyone who's ever pondered their own origins. Please take a listen. In this segment, we revisit the riveting conversation with John. Have you ever faced a moment where a simple conversation at dinner unveiled a life-changing secret? That's exactly what happened to John. During a casual dinner, as friends discussed their DNA test discoveries, John expressed interest in his own test, only to be met with a stern directive from his father, "Don't take that DNA test until I'm dead." Take a listen.
So what we've discovered on this show, and what you definitely point out through several people's stories in the documentary, is that you can't keep DNA secrets anymore. Family secrets, they're not locked away in the chest or in the closet anymore. And so definitely a lot of people had some surprises in your documentary.
I would say, yes. Present company included, yes.
Right, exactly. So you get to a point where you probably didn't think there was going to be any kind of family shocks, but your father was very adamant about you not taking a DNA test.
very adamant. And it came up very randomly, as you know. We just had dinner, his birthday dinner with some friends, 2018. And they were just talking about how they took DNA tests as part of adult education at the University of Miami. I mean, they all migrated to Florida. They're all from New Jersey originally. That's just what people do. So we're at dinner and they're talking about how they've learned about their heritage. And I said to my dad, oh, I want to take one of those because his mother was adopted. So I figured, oh, I know I was raised Jewish and I think I'm all Jewish, but maybe there's something else in there. And just sat there with his lips pursed. We were talking. I was talking to his friend about it. His friend's name is Eddie. And we were going back and forth. And my dad just turned his chair to me and said, I don't want you to take that DNA test until I'm dead. And I wasn't the only one at the table that kind of looked at him funny.
John's episode and documentary, Filling in the Blanks, will take you through the profound impact of uncovering hidden truths, the emotional turbulence of family secrets coming to light, and the journey toward reconciling with the past. Don't miss this powerful discussion. As with other clips, a link to each guest's family twist is in the show notes for this episode. Have you ever felt a piece of your identity was missing, something fundamental that could reshape how you see yourself? In this clip, we dive back into one of our most profound episodes in which Peter J. Boney shares his journey of uncovering his donor-conceived origins. This discussion isn't just about personal discovery. It's a window into the complexities of assisted reproductive technology and the search for identity in the age of DNA testing. I think listening to this episode, you'll gain insights into the emotional impact of discovering your own biological origins, understanding the ethical and regulatory challenges in the reproductive technology industry, and exploring the deep personal growth that comes from uncovering hidden truths. Here's Peter.
Toni Morrison, I think, said something like, if there's a book out there you want to read and you can't find it, you should write it. When I discovered in 1995 that I was donor conceived and I could not for the life of me find any records, or my mother gave me incorrect clues to track my genealogy, my health history, and whether or not I had siblings as an only child, my only recourse was to do a deep dive of research into the assisted reproductive technology that enabled my conception to begin with. And I went somewhere between Harvard Medical School's library and the Boston Public Library in the old gumshoe methods. I remember in 1995, the internet was in its infancy. Google was 3 years away from being founded. And the DNA technology was 12 years away from 23andMe being the first one to come out with such an offering. So that was my only recourse, and it was somewhat therapeutic for me to do that. This book idea came about in two different waves, and the second wave was after I had learned that I was not Northern Italian. I was English, French, and a sliver of Scandinavian on my paternal side. And I had exposed some of what I learned to a friend of mine. And he said, you know, Pete, I used to breed Rottweilers, and the breeding of puppies has greater regulation, greater regulatory oversight than the conception of human beings.
If you're intrigued by the mysteries of your own lineage or the hidden stories within modern medicine, this is a conversation you should not miss. Have you ever felt powerless in a situation where secrets were kept from you? In this next clip, we revisit a powerful segment with Wendy Kramer, founder of the Donor Sibling Registry. Wendy shares how she helped her own son claim his own narrative in the complex world of donor conception. Wendy's two-part episode highlights the struggles and empowerment that come from seeking the truth in the shadows of secrecy. I believe that by listening, you'll gain a better understanding of the emotional impacts of donor conception, learn the importance of empowering those affected to take action, and appreciate the deep bonds that can form when navigating these journeys as a family unit.
Now, in the short amount of time that we've spent with you, I know we can both say that you are an awesome mom, and that's the way it should happen. I think that's a lot of the anger there, and not just with, you know, donor-conceived people, but, you know, anybody that's gets a secret, a shock, you know?
I think our close relationship in part is because his whole donor journey we did as a team. It wasn't like I'm telling him what to think about it. When he was angry, like when he was six, he was saying, I want to know who my biological father is. Like the sperm bank knows it. Mm-hmm. What if my donor wants to know me and I want to know him? The sperm bank won't let us know each other. And I empowered him by having him write a letter to the sperm bank. I knew it wouldn't do anything, but I wanted him to have a sense of empowerment, like you are not a victim in this.
Right.
So he wrote a letter. I want you to give me this information. And, you know, it was a pretty stern letter. And I had him like address the envelope and we mailed it together, all like this empowering thing. Of course, they never acknowledged it or whatever, but I didn't want him to feel like a victim in this.
Right.
I wanted him to have some power in the situation. We had no idea that ultimately he would definitely have some power in the situation beyond the sperm bank. Thank goodness.
Prepare to be moved by Wendy's story of advocacy and empowerment. This is a conversation that sheds light on the importance of voice and action in the face of institutional barriers. Ever faced a moment so charged that humor was your only relief? That's precisely what Lauren encountered when confronting her mother about her DNA test results. A moment packed with anticipation and defense, leading to a revelation that she might be related to the late Princess Diana. As the conversation unfolded, dishes clanged in the background, a testament to the tension in the air. Take a listen.
What also had happened during this is that this new sibling I had looked on Facebook and he's like, wow, Lauren and I have a common friend. So he calls common friend, who was his deceased mother's best friend. And he's like, wow, why don't we both know Lauren? And she's like, oh, because, you know, your mother was my best friend, but I have two best friends. And the other one is Lauren's mom. So he was like, so I think maybe we should just not talk about this until we figure this out. Let's just keep this between us. Hangs up. Now, realizing that the reason why his mom never told her is because she has the biggest mouth on the planet. So she hangs up and calls my mom immediately and tells her everything. So when my mom answers the door, she knows that I know that I know that she knows that I know. It's like was so. And so she's like trying to chatter away and try to like fill up all the air and not wanted to bring it up. And finally had to say, Mom, I did a DNA test. Charles and I, my brother, figured it out. We know. And she was like, I'm not going to talk about this. I'm leaving. I'm like, where are you going to go? With COVID? Like, where are you going? And fine. And she goes into the kitchen. She's like angrily doing dishes, so pissed. And I was like, I had to break the tension, which is just what I always do by making her laugh. And I told her something that we had found out in all of this research. And I said, Mom, well, the silver lining to all of this is I am potentially related to Princess Diana.
In the full episode, you'll gain insights into handling unexpected truths with humor, understanding the complexities of DNA surprises, and discovering the role of communication in unraveling family secrets. Lauren's infectious humor is sure to grab you. Have you ever felt overwhelmed by the incomplete parts of your story? In this next clip, we delve into Michelle's reflective journey as she shares how she's learned to focus on the parts of her story that are resolved, fostering gratitude amidst a community where many face far more heart-wrenching revelations.
Now I just have to know to live without having all the pieces in place. And I try to be really grateful that my puzzle pieces that are missing are just really not, they're more out of me being, you know, obsessive compulsive, just wanting everything in place and the whole story. You know, there's so many more tragic stories than mine. So many, you know, complicated stories of this misattributed parentage world. And, so I think that's helping too, just to realize, hey, let me be grateful for the things I do have and know, and the people I've gotten to know, and the pieces that are in place, the answers I do have.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a community that's growing daily, and you know we see a lot of just heartbreaking stories. It's important, I think, to think of the positive side of things, because things can always be worse, right?
Right. But, you know, I do want to applaud you. I'm glad that you did go there with your mother. I mean, I'm glad you had that conversation. As uncomfortable as it was, I'm sure, you know, I just, to feel like you're owed that, you know, as the child, you know, no matter how long it took to get the answers, you know, it's like, you still deserve it. Yeah. Please take in the full episode. Michelle's perspective is a compelling reminder of the strength found in positive thinking and gratitude within the often tumultuous journey of misattributed parentage. Corey is really excited to be attending the Untangling Our Roots conference later this week, the end of the week into the weekend, partially because we've gotten really good guests from our connections already with Right to Know and the National Association of Adoptees and Parents. We expect to find even more guests for the podcast because of Corey's going to the conference. And he's also going to be in a smaller group there that really focuses on family rejection. We've recently gone through something that is a little touchy for me to talk about personally, and I don't have any animosity toward my sister or my niece or her new husband, but we were not invited to my niece's wedding recently, which happened in southern Louisiana, where my mother, if you've been listening to the podcast, you know that I have no relationship with my birth mother, that she refuses to connect with me. And I'm consistently resentful that by default, I am excluded from family events. Like I said, I don't blame my sister or my niece for not inviting me. I get it that I'm not welcome there if my mother's there. So, you know, and of course I feel as if my mother should be at her own granddaughter's wedding. I don't harbor any resentment except toward my mother, because she could fix all of this by either acknowledging me or just saying, come, you know, to the wedding. We don't have to hang out. We don't have to bond. That's not what this is about. This is about that I'm still missing things in my life because of her. And I'm resentful about that. I work through it, but it isn't always going to be this way. If I'm invited to something, I'm very likely going to go. And it's because I want to go. I feel as if I'm missing out on family experiences. And I don't think that's fair to me or to the family members, the other family members. For instance, I've met my niece. She and I got along really well. I think she's a great kid. Like, I wanted to be there to celebrate her wedding. So it isn't this just figment of my imagination, you know, these are people that I have gotten to know and I want to be around. Jackie, if you're listening, I hold you completely responsible for that. Thanks so much for listening. We can't wait to catch up with you and let you know how the Untangling Our Roots conference goes.
The Family Twist podcast features original music by Cosmic Afterthoughts, is presented by Savoir Faire Marketing Communications, and is produced by How the Cow Ate the Cabbage, LLC.